Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. In the Gambia, supporters of losing candidates in Saturday's election protest as President Barrow appeals for unity.
President Barrow also took the opportunity to address his supporters during a victory speech in the capital, where he called for unity between the country's political factions.
Meanwhile, African Union election observers say the Gambia vote met international standards. Britain adds Nigeria to its Omicron travel ban. Who is threatening the Eswatini Speaker of Parliament? Protesters took to the streets again on Monday in Sudan, and Zambia's President Hakainde Hichilema visits Malawi today, Tuesday.
It is a signal that the President of Zambia and the people of Zambia do value the relations between Zambia and Malawi. So Malawians are excited to see the President of Zambia come to Malawi.
And finding an alternative rite of passage in Kenya, those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambian President Adama Barrow has appealed for unity following his landslide victory in last Saturday's presidential election. Journalist Joe Brito in the Gambian capital Banjul says police fired tear gas on Monday at supporters of the losing candidates who took to the streets to protest the results.
Gambians have received a lot of praise after what was described as one of the most peaceful elections in the history of this country, something that was in fact corroborated by the regional and international observers who were present in the country to observe the entire election process. Fast forward, supporters of some opposition parties have taken to the streets to protest the results of the election and also to stand in solidarity with their party leaders who have lost. That video was taken along the Kairaba Avenue, just next to the American embassy. Protesters had clashed with the police, resulting to tear gas being fired to disperse the crowd.
Which of the three opposition candidates who had said that they would challenge the results of the presidential election do these demonstrators support?
Most of the protesters out there on the streets are supporters of the United Democratic Party led by Usainu Dabo. We've also seen videos where supporters of the Gambia Democratic Congress are out there, but so far we have not seen supporters of Esa Mbaifal take part in this protest.
What has happened since Sunday when the results were announced? Did any of these three opposition candidates announce or change their minds to support or to congratulate President Barrow?
James, since the announcement of the results by the Independent Electoral Commission, both the leader of the United Democratic Party and Mama Kande, who's the leader of the Gambia Democratic Congress, have not said a thing yet. They've neither congratulated the president, Adama Barrow, nor have they changed their position as far as protesting the results of the election is concerned. But what we've seen is that Esa Fall has issued a statement on his official Facebook page where he told the Gambian people that he had called President Barrow to congratulate him on this win.
What's on the agenda for President Barrow now? What's coming in the next 2 days or so?
Good question, James. It seems like the only plan is a celebration until the end of the week. As a matter of fact, as soon as President Barrow was declared the winner of the 2021 presidential elections, his supporters wasted no time in storming the capital city in Banjul for a victory celebration. President Barrow also took the opportunity to address his supporters during a victory speech in the capital, where he called for unity between the country's political factions. He said to, you know, put aside their political and other differences and come together as one people towards the development of this country.
Thank you so much again, Sajo, for taking the time to speak with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, James.
That was journalist Sajo Brito speaking with us from the Gambian capital, Banjul. In the Gambia, the African Union Poll Observer Mission says the just concluded presidential election was administered in a peaceful and democratic environment that met international standards. In its preliminary report, the observer team commended the government, the citizens, other stakeholders, including the Independent Electoral Commission, political parties, candidates, and their supporters for remaining peaceful during the election period. The group also called for the prevailing peace to be maintained. Former South African President Halema Molante, who leads the African Union Poll Observer Team, says the voting process was calm, adding that polling staff and voters show commitment and a sense of professionalism.
Well, my first impression was when we observed the opening of the polling stations, and that they have this unique system of using drums, tokens, and sent with a counting board. Anybody can cast their vote without any difficulties. And the presiding officers of the Independent Electoral Commission were there. The actual voting takes less than 3 seconds, because they literally disappear behind the curtain, and the drums are there color-coded with the pictures of the contesting candidates, and they select whoever they want to vote for, and they drop the token, which is a marble, into the drum, and it rings like the old bicycle bell, and everybody can hear that the vote has been cast, and they immediately walk out. So it's a wonderful innovation, actually.
So, Mr. President, I'm sure you've heard reports that some of the losing presidential candidates have rejected the outcome of the election, citing all kinds of issues they had. Have you spoken with any of them? And what advice will you give them about the way to address their concerns?
We actually pleaded with all the presidential candidates who were not successful to follow the legal channel for recourse, should they feel aggrieved by any of the either preparations or the actual day of voting, to seek redress in that fashion. And yes, I've had an opportunity to speak with two of them. One actually understands that that's the way to go. The other gentleman also met historical issues to raise from 2016, and however, he said they will pursue all of those through the legal channels.
What are some of the recommendations that you would suggest that the people of Gambia implement to ensure an improved system?
The very first recommendation we made was that the Independent Electoral Commission should establish an in-house legal unit or department, so that they do not continue to rely on giving a brief to private attorneys when litigation is mounted against them. The second recommendation we made relates to the fact that the constitution under the era of former President Yahya Jammeh had been amended many times in order to consolidate his position and give him undue advantage in the elections. And therefore, the Gambia needs to adopt a new constitution, which would ensure that it serves as the central pillar of the democracy they are establishing. And we also recommend that they should really keep this unique, wonderful, innovative electoral system of voting. Yeah.
Former South African President Halema Molante, who leads the African Union Poll Observer Team to the Gambia. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Banjul. Amid debate by many African leaders about African countries being given travel bans over the Omicron COVID variant, Britain has added Nigeria to its red list. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
London's travel ban on Nigeria took effect at 4 a.m. Monday, according to a statement from the UK's Nigeria Country Office. The ban makes the United Kingdom the third country to ban travelers from Nigeria since the onset of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. UK authorities said the ban was deemed essential after 21 cases of the new variant were reported in travelers from Nigeria. UK citizens and residents traveling from Nigeria will be allowed re-entry but must isolate in a government-managed facility, the statement said. During a television interview on Sunday, Nigeria's Health Minister Osagie Ehanire criticized the travel ban. He noted that the move contravened the World Health Organization's position that countries must collaborate and not shut their borders as a result of the new variant.
The rationale for being so hasty in putting countries on a red list is not something that is very helpful. It's going to disrupt commerce, it's going to disrupt family reunions, it is going to disrupt the movement of goods and services, particularly at this time of year, towards the time of Christmas festivities.
Nigeria announced three cases of the Omicron variant last Wednesday, but the UK's discovery of more cases in Nigerian travellers raised concerns about the possibility of undetected transmission in the country. However, Ehanire says that does not warrant a travel ban just yet.
We regularly get travelers coming in from the UK who are COVID positive. In fact, within the last 2 weeks, the COVID positive arrivals that we had were 50% from the UK. And there is genetic sequencing going on. We shall have the results soon. We don't know how many of them are necessarily Omicron variants.
The Omicron variant has spread to nearly 50 countries, and experts say the virus spreads more than twice as quickly as the Delta variant. But scientists are not sure of Omicron's impact and whether it causes the same numbers of hospitalizations and deaths. Nigerian Justin Chukwuemeka was scheduled to fly to the UK this week to reunite with his family. He says the new travel ban is devastating.
This whole development is a whole new, and it's actually going to cause a lot of discomfort in different areas, both financially, even mentally and all that. But I'm hoping and believing that this doesn't last long.
UK authorities say the ban will stay in place for 3 weeks before they review whether the measures are necessary. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 7th. Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera will host his counterpart, Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema, today, Tuesday. This as the Zambian head of state officially visits the neighboring country for the first time since he won the August presidential election. Malawi's Foreign Minister Eisenhower Mkaka tells viewers Peter Clotty the two leaders will discuss strong bilateral relations between Lilongwe and Lusaka.
The President of the Republic of Zambia, His Excellency Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, will be visiting Malawi officially. This meeting or his visit is very crucial because you will appreciate the fact that Malawi and Zambia are the closest of neighbors, sharing a number of things, in common. We're talking about the people. We're having Chewa people in Malawi, Chewa people in Zambia, Tonga people in Malawi, Tonga people in Zambia, Ngon people in Malawi, Ngon people in Zambia, Tumbukas in Malawi, Tumbukas in Zambia. So, yes, we've got every reason to work closely, mutually, and bilaterally in order to advance the interests of the peoples of the two countries.
Now, I understand there will be bilateral and warm diplomatic discussions between the two heads of state, and they described as a president-to-president diplomacy. What does that mean? what is the status of relations between the two countries, between Lilongwe and Lusaka?
I'm glad to report here that we have the best of relations. We are enjoying the best of relations at the moment. You see, when Dr. Lazarus Chakwera came in, one of the things he prioritized was the normalization of relations between Malawi and her neighbors. Before that, Malawi was more of an island, enjoying very unfriendly relations with her immediate neighbors. And that was a big issue which Dr. Chakwera purposed to correct soon after taking office. So I would say that we are very happy with the kind of relations existing between Malawi and Zambia, not to talk about the relations between Malawi and the other two neighbors, Zambia, I mean, Tanzania and Mozambique.
What is the expectations of the people of Malawi and the government in Lilongwe ahead of Tuesday's meeting between the two heads of state?
Well, people are so much looking forward to the visit. People are excited, more especially knowing that Zambia is one of the crucial members of Malawi, and for the president of Zambia to take time off his visit schedule to come and visit his counterpart here, it is a signal that the president of Zambia and the people of Zambia do value the relations existing between Zambia and Malawi. So Malawians are excited to see the president of the Republic of Zambia come to Malawi.
That was Malawi Foreign Minister Isaac Howard Mkaka speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. In Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, the Speaker of Parliament, Petros Marvin Bella, says he's being mocked and threatened by unknown individuals who, he said, have threatened to kill him. However, Marvin Bella tells me that God is watching over him.
I don't know who is making these threats against me, but what I can say is that, yes, there are those people who are making these threats towards me. But to be honest with you, I'm not too sure who are those people.
You are the Honorable Speaker of Parliament. Why would someone threaten the Speaker of Parliament?
Yes, I am the Speaker of Parliament. To answer your question that why am I being threatened? And again, I will say, I don't know. And then I'm not too sure why I'm being threatened. But yes. There is, there are those maybe who feel that I'm on their way.
Honorable, two members of your parliament have been in jail for several months now for attempting, as according to them, to present a petition in parliament. Do you think these threats could be related to the ongoing political unrest in Eswatini?
Well, I'm not too sure, my brother. I'm not too sure whether it's that or not, but to be honest with you, I'm not too sure.
So what steps do you think the authorities are you taking to protect yourself?
Well, I will say that God himself, he is the only one who's protecting me. I cannot rely to anyone else except to my God.
You must be a man of faith.
I fully agree with you.
What about the police, Your Honorable?
The police?
Yes, what are they doing? I mean, have you reported these threats to the police?
Well, yes, I have. I have, yeah. I did report to the police. And then, the police, they are doing their part to locate all those who are threatening me. But up to now, God is the one who's protecting me more than anyone else on this earth.
What do you make of the current political situation in Eswatini, because as I said again, two members of your parliament are in jail. I was reading also that the two members of parliament have appealed to the king to intervene in their situation. Are you aware of that?
No, not at all. I'm just getting those news from you. But if that is the case, then I think they have everyone can appeal to the king. That is allowed according to our culture. You can appeal to the king. And then if they have done that, then we'd hear from the king as how he's going to respond to their appeal.
That was Petrus Mavimbela, the Eswatini Speaker of Parliament. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. Sudanese security forces used tear gas again on Monday to disperse demonstrators against the October military takeover and the deal that brought former Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok back into the government. Journalist Michael Atit is in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Yesterday, there was a weekly protest that has been organized by political forces and what so-called resistance committees, which are activists within the residential areas who are mainly the force behind these continuous protests currently taking place. As you know, they are commemorating 2019's December resolution that kicked off in Sudan. So they have like a weekly roster for the protests, demanding the same demands for military rule should be stepped down and allow the civilian now to rule Sudan. And they are also demanding the abolishment of the constitutional document that is being ruled by the military. They also ask Hamdok to step down and allow political parties to, you know, take the lead and lead the transitional period.
What can you tell us about these reports that the authorities have prevented or put a travel ban on some members of the pro-democracy group from traveling outside of Sudan? Do you know about that?
That could be possible. One of the last individuals who have been in custody since last month, the last person actually being released was the former Minister of Trade, Ibrahim Eshef. He spoke out clearly that he has been prevented by the security at the Khartoum International Airport. He also, you know, shared on social media that he has been prevented from traveling. There has been an allegation of other members as well who wanted to travel outside, some for treatment, some for checkup, some for family visit. But up to this moment, it's only Ibrahim Eshef who has spoken out that he has been prevented from traveling outside.
Michael, thank you so much always. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, James.
That was journalist Michael Atit speaking with us from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Kenya is lobbying stakeholders and communities to support the adoption of an alternative rites of passage to replace female genital mutilation, or FGM. Speaking during the launch of Johari Beads Bracelet Initiative, a program of the government and partners to promote the trade in beads in support of efforts to end FGM, Kenya's First Lady, Margaret Kenyatta, said the initiative is a major step towards the noble agenda of the government to eliminate FGM. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, cross-border female genital mutilation is a major obstacle in the fight against the practice in Kenya.
A national campaign in Kenya dubbed Johari Bead Initiative has been launched in fight against female genital mutilation, an initiative that targets girls and women in Kenya's pastoralist communities. The proposal will take girls through a 15-day initiative program comprising of sessions on mentorship into adulthood, healthy relationships, life skills training, basic home economics, and the art of bead making. Kenya's First Lady Margaret Kenyatta said that the aim is to end FGM by 2022.
This project has created a lot of awareness around the country, but also globally. It has raised awareness on the dangers of FGM and supported His Excellency President's agenda to end FGM by 2022, liberate our girls and women from pastoral communities, from the shackles of poverty and indecency.
The First Lady encouraged stakeholders in the anti-FGM campaign to adopt the alternative rites of passage, urging responsible state agencies not to relent in the efforts to end the retrogressive practice.
We must end FGM. I note with satisfaction that under the Ushanga Kenya Initiative, Johari beads have become an emblem of the eradication of FGM.
FGM poses long-term health risks to young women and often leads to school dropout and early marriages, thus compromising the opportunities for social and economic advancement for the affected girls. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
And that's it for this Tuesday, December 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.